You're listening to Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Professor Pinaki Chakraborty is co-author of a new study published November 11, 2020 in the prestigious journal Nature. The title is Slower Decay of Landfalling Hurricanes in a Warming World. Professor Chakraborty is principal investigator for the Fluid Mechanics Unit at Okinawa Institute of Science and Technology in Japan. From Okinawa, Pinaki Chakraborty, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks, Alex. Thanks a lot for having me.
So, first of all, what is the study of fluid mechanics, and how does that connect you into storms in a changing climate?
Okay, so fluid mechanics is the study of how fluids flow, and I should explain what fluids are. When we say fluids, we mean both liquids as well as gases. So, for example, flow of water or flow of air. But fluid mechanics is also more broad in the sense that, let me take an everyday example, toothpaste. When you open the toothpaste, you don't want the toothpaste to flow out automatically, so you would like the toothpaste to behave like a solid. But when you press the toothpaste, you do want the toothpaste to flow out, so you want it to behave like a fluid. So you have these kind of complex materials which sometimes behave like solids and sometimes behave like fluids, and that study is also included in the broad umbrella of fluid mechanics. Specifically, the areas of fluid mechanics that I am interested in, these are called turbulent flows, and I can give you another everyday example of that. If you take a kitchen sink and you open the faucet slowly, you would see that the water comes out in a very organized manner. But if you open the faucet more, then at some point, water flow transitions from this very organized flow to very, very disorganized, chaotic, jumbling flow. That's called turbulent flow. Specifically, my interest is turbulent flows. And hurricanes happen to be one of the nature's gigantic, massive examples of turbulent flows. And that's how I somehow ended up being interested in hurricanes.
I find that all very interesting. So in the past, we assumed hurricanes were just a problem for people at or near the sea coast. But in the last 10 years or so, it seems like the damage keeps going further inland. We just had one go way into the Carolinas. Why did you and lead author Lynn Lee decide to check up on this?
Okay, so let me give you a bit of a background on both mine and Lynn's path onto this particular problem. As it so happens in many other examples in research, this was not the problem that we initially set out to investigate. So I mentioned my background is fluid mechanics, and I study turbulent flows. And about 8 years ago, I moved from the U.S. to Okinawa, Japan. And when I was about to move to Okinawa, I realized that, well, this is an area of the world that experiences a lot of hurricanes, which are called typhoons in this part of the world. So I better read up a little bit about typhoons. And I did. And after I moved to Okinawa, I experienced my first typhoon essentially within a week or two of moving here. And this was really nature's spectacle of turbulent flow rendered right in front of your eyes. So it captured me a lot, and I started to get more interested in the physics of hurricanes. Well, a few years later, Lin Li also moved to Okinawa. He came from central China, and he had not seen a typhoon either. And this is something that captured his attention too. Now, my institute, Okinawa Institute of Science and Technology, OIST, it has this fascinating funding structure which allows us to pursue curiosity-driven research. So although I am not a meteorologist and Lynn did not have any background in meteorology, both of us got interested in hurricanes, typhoons, and we decided to study this in some detail. And it turned out that we were doing some simulations of typhoons past landfall or hurricanes past landfall. And we kept finding features that we simply could not explain using existing theories of what happens to hurricanes after landfall. Well, long story short, we basically realized that there was a crucial element that was missing in the prevailing theories, and it was that element that gave us a link to climate. So we said, well, if our speculation is correct, then we should be able to see a very clear link of a warming climate and a slower decay of hurricanes past landfall. And that's how we started to investigate this problem.
Then, looking back over the past 50 years, what changes did you identify about the way hurricanes behave?
So we studied North Atlantic landfalling hurricanes. What we did is that for each landfalling hurricane that met certain criteria, mainly being at the time of landfall, it was classified as a hurricane. It had hurricane strength winds. And past landfall, it stayed over land for at least one full day. What we looked at is how the hurricane intensity decays over this first day. And this essentially happens to be the day, the first day, where the hurricane inflicts most of its destruction. So for each landfalling hurricane in the North Atlantic Basin that satisfied this criteria, we studied this time scale of the decay, how quickly does the hurricane decay. Then we looked at a time series that we did statistical averaging of different hurricanes, and we saw how does this time series evolve with time. Now, if there were no effect of climate or anything else, you would imagine that this decay time scale, the time it takes for a hurricane to decay, would essentially be like a flat line with the years. But what we saw is, no, it was not a flat line. It was actually increasing. In other words, 50 years back, it would take a shorter amount of time, about, let's say, 17 hours for most of the decay to take place. Now it takes almost twice, 33 hours for this decay to take place. So this was one of the surprising elements that was missed in previous studies, that with the years, the decay timescale of a hurricane has increased, or in other words, the decay of hurricanes past landfall has slowed down.
So what we're talking about is strong storms last longer, and so therefore if they're traveling, they'll go further inland and reach places that don't expect to feel the force of what was at least a hurricane.
Absolutely, that's exactly right.
TV weather reporters and some of the scientific guests right on this show tell us hotter surface waters in the sea breed stronger hurricanes. How does that work, Panaki?
Let me give a very short primer on how hurricanes work over ocean. And what I'm describing is what's called a mature steady state hurricane. So a hurricane is a very, very complicated flow. There's all kinds of stuff going on over there. But thermodynamically, a simple model of a hurricane is a heat engine. What's a heat engine? A heat engine is essentially a device that converts thermal energy into mechanical energy. A common example is a car engine. The fuel that goes in is gasoline. When the gasoline is combusted in the engine, the thermal energy released via a complicated mechanism of the engine is then transferred to the motion of a car. So that's the mechanical energy part of it. A hurricane can essentially be thought of as a very complicated, but in its heart, a heat engine. The fuel of the hurricane heat engine is moisture from the ocean. And the complex machinery of the hurricane translates the moisture, the heat contained in the moisture, into the intense swirling winds of a hurricane. And as oceans heat up, as the atmosphere heats up, the fuel supply to a hurricane is increased. And because of the increased fuel supply, you have conditions that are conducive for the hurricane to become more intense. So that's the connection between warmer ocean, warmer atmosphere, and more intense hurricanes.
If you have a story idea or thoughts on something you've heard, contact us, radio@ecoshock.org. That's radio@ecoshock.org.
Now, when extreme rains fall out of the storm clouds, what happens to that heat?
Okay, so now this one is quite tricky. So let me say a few things about clouds first. Imagine from the surface of the ocean, you have this moisture, which is water vapor, that's going up. As these air parcels that carry this moisture are going up, they expand, they become cooler, and at some point, the air parcel becomes saturated. So if there are, for example, dust or some other small particles present there, then the saturated moisture can then condense and form liquid water. In the process of this condensation, from moisture to liquid water, what is released is latent heat of condensation, which is huge. Clouds, effectively, are a conglomeration, a mixture of these very small liquid water droplets and ice crystals. By the time a cloud forms, Largely, this latent heat of condensation has already been released. It can be released in situ where the cloud forms, or it can be released prior to when the cloud forms. And when the rain forms in a cloud, that's yet another level of a very complex process whereby these very little tiny droplets, they collide with each other and then aggregate into a larger drop so that it has enough mass so that it can fall out of the cloud. Okay, so in this whole process, from moisture going to ice crystals or liquid water, you have all this latent heat that has been released. And somehow, the hurricane heat engine has translated this released latent heat into the swirling winds of a hurricane. So one can ask the question, well, what is the precise mechanism via which this heat engine actually works? And that's actually pretty tricky. So we have very good numerical simulations via which we can simulate this whole process. But when we say explain how precisely is this latent heat converted into the very intense winds of a hurricane, we have to understand that we are not talking about latent heat that has been released quite high up and winds that are being driven all over the hurricane, most intense winds being quite close to the surface. So it's a connected, very complicated system, and we really understand quite a bit of it, but if we start to get into the details get quite intricate to explain.
Yes, I have had a cloud specialist on this program say that probably the kind of chaos theory that you need for really understanding clouds is one of the more difficult questions of science. Now, we can ask this one, though. How does the extra water in modern clouds, assuming that there is extra water in modern clouds, how does that get further inland than it ever did before?
So one of the things that we were able to do in our study is to couple the observations. By observations, I mean the North Atlantic landfalling hurricanes I mentioned before, with computational simulations. In an actual field study, in our case being North Atlantic hurricanes, there are a number of different factors that can affect decay of a hurricane. So it's very, very difficult to pin down one single factor. So it's always nice to complement observational studies with something that is more physically based. And that choice for us was to do numerical simulations of landfalling hurricanes. And in our simulations, we made sure that we have just a single parameter that's different between the different hurricanes that we simulate. And that parameter is basically the sea surface temperature. So we develop hurricanes over different oceans, and the oceans, the only difference between them is that they have different sea surface temperature. And what is endowed into a hurricane when it makes landfall, when the hurricane is cut off from the ocean, is the amount of moisture that is stored in the hurricane from its travel in the ocean prior to the landfall. That moisture, by and large, is stored in many, many different parts of the hurricane, not just the clouds, but in many, many different parts, essentially all over the hurricane. And when this hurricane makes landfall, what we found with the simulations very, very clearly is that the hurricanes that were developed over warmer oceans and therefore contained more moisture, they decayed much more slowly. Meaning, somehow, this moisture provided the latent heat to fuel the slower decay of the hurricane past landfall. Now, what is the precise mechanism via which the moisture fueled this slower decay? That is something that's pretty much under investigation right now. And I think over time, not just my group, but I believe I am, or at least I hope, other groups also investigate this problem much more carefully. And I think over time, we'll have a much better understanding of how precisely this extra moisture that is carried by the hurricane fuels the slower decay.
So is it the relationship that you found with sea surface temperature the factor that leads you to conclude that climate change is involved in this change in typhoons or hurricanes?
That's correct. So going back to the observations that I mentioned about the increase of the decay timescale with years, it turns out that the increase is not monotonic. It is about a linearly increasing line, but there are ups and downs about this line. And when you start to see these kinds of ups and downs, you often wonder, well, okay, what is the cause that underlies these ups and downs? Yes, the timescale has been increasing, but it's not monotonic. So why is it undulating about this increasing trend? And because we already had an idea that perhaps moisture was playing a role, the natural choice for us was to look for sea surface temperature. And indeed, the moment we plotted sea surface temperature on the same graph as we plot the decay timescale, we find the ups and downs of the decay timescale precisely echo the ups and downs of the sea surface temperature. Now, you couple that together with the simulations that we did, more sea surface temperature, more moisture to the hurricane, slower decay of the hurricane. So sea surface temperature goes up, your decay timescale goes up. Likewise, lower sea surface temperature, less amount of moisture, so therefore the decay is faster. So the sea surface temperature goes down, the decay timescale goes down. In other words, you can explain not just the increase of the decay timescale over the years, but you can also explain the ups and downs of that decay timescale.
In your new paper in Nature, I was really interested to hear about climate-modulated changes in hurricane tracks. Please tell us more about that.
So as I mentioned, in real hurricanes, it's very rare that there's just one factor that controls the decay. There's a multitude of factors that a hurricane is subjected to, and the decay, therefore, is controlled by a multitude of factors. Our study clearly establishes that one of the important factors is the sea surface temperature. But we also wanted to consider a number of additional factors that could, in principle, contribute to the slower decay. And one of those factors that we investigated were the positions where the hurricanes are making landfall. So it's useful to understand tracks of hurricane. So hurricane is a gigantic vortex. Well, what do I mean by a gigantic vortex? Well, let's say about 10 miles in thickness, so all the way from the surface of the ocean to the tropopause, and let's say about 500 miles in diameter, so really huge. But this huge atmospheric vortex is embedded in even much larger basin-scale winds, which are called steering winds. So you can almost think of a hurricane moving as, I don't know, like a leaf that is floating on a stream. And it's this large-scale steering winds that determine the track of a hurricane. Coming to the North Atlantic hurricanes, there are two very different kinds of tracks, and these tracks are associated with hurricanes that make landfall in the Gulf of Mexico area, and the other set of tracks are associated with hurricanes that make landfall further north, let's say the Central Atlantic area. What number of simulations have shown is that with increase of greenhouse gases, the large-scale steering winds themselves change so that preferentially, the tracks shift eastward. In other words, they shift towards Central Atlantic region. And if the tracks change, that means that the hurricane is subjected now to different geographical regions over time. And different geographical regions can have different effect on hurricane decay. For example, the topography of the land underneath can be different. The kind of atmospheric shear that a hurricane is subjected to can be different. A number of factors can be different. Although it is not quite precisely understood why there is a difference, a pronounced difference, between the decay timescales for hurricanes that make landfall from the Gulf of Mexico region versus hurricanes that make landfall in the Central Atlantic region, there is a pronounced shift of track, and we did take that also into account. And roughly speaking, what we found is that the increase in the time scale of decay over the years, 80% can be attributed to increase in the sea surface temperature, and 20% can be attributed to the shifts in the track.
So if those tracks shift, are you suggesting that different parts of the United States could be hit by more hurricanes than currently experience them?
That is something that's beyond the purview of our particular study, but my understanding based on the other studies that I have read is that indeed, yes, because of this eastward shift in tracks, the regions of the U.S. that were not quite prone to being hit by hurricanes before will experience more frequent hurricanes.
At the end of August 2020, your island of Okinawa, where you are now, experienced Typhoon Maysak. Were you there that day, and what happened?
Okay, yes, I remember this one quite clearly. Yes, I was here on that day. And before Typhoon Mesak hit Okinawa, it was already undergoing rapid intensification. I believe it had reached Category 4. And there were parts of Okinawa that were prone to flash flooding. So the authorities here had evacuated something of the order of 500 people or so. Fortunately for me, I live in a part of Okinawa that is not prone to flash flooding at all. So it did not affect me directly, but I was following the news to see how these preparations were going on. And as is true for most of the world now, coronavirus has made these things much worse because you can't quite congregate a whole bunch of people in an evacuation shelter that you could do before the pandemic hit. So yes, right before Typhoon Mesak passed us by, there was quite a bit of apprehension about what is going to happen. Fortunately, the typhoon slowed down. I think it slowed down from Category 4 to Category 2 by the time it came close to Okinawa. So the damages were much less than what was initially anticipated. There was power outage in some parts of the island, but by and large, things were quite manageable.
And less than a week later, Super Typhoon Haishen struck Japan and South Korea, and it reached Cat 4, but then reduced to Cat 2 by landfall. And this is just one of a series of tightly packed giant storms hitting across the world, one, two, three at a time, from Nicaragua to the Philippines and Japan, as we just talked about, a couple of them. I know you're not a meteorologist, but does this frequency of storms stimulate your interest?
Oh, very much so. And yes, indeed, I'm not a meteorologist, but you know, it's hard to not look at the news and be concerned about what's going on. And because I have been studying hurricanes for a few years now, this problem of, at least apparently it seems that these much more intense storms becoming more frequent is something that is very, very concerning.
Panaki, when the storm has passed, what are your more normal subjects of research?
Well, Alex, I'm not sure if I have any normal subjects of research, but I have a rather eclectic taste in different problems that interest me. So, for example, a problem that's sort of related with hurricanes is these very large-scale atmospheric flows. For example, the large-scale winds that I mentioned that steer a hurricane. And in my group, we do some experiments with, essentially, it's a modified soap bubble. And we try to study some properties of these very large-scale atmospheric flows, which can be emulated by what are called two-dimensional flows. So these flows are quite spread apart, essentially on a plane, but they are of very small thickness. I'm also interested in what is called transition to turbulence. So an example of that would be an example I mentioned at the beginning of this interview, which was a kitchen faucet. When you open the faucet a slight bit, the flow is very organized. When you open it much more, the flow becomes very disorganized. But this transition from organized to disorganized flow is reflecting the transition from organized to disorganized flow inside the pipe in which the water was flowing prior to coming out of the faucet. And that's a problem that is very, very interesting, not just from a technological point of view, an engineering point of view, but also has many scientific questions about which very little is known. And it's really at the cutting edge of what we understand about what one might think as a very simple problem, water flowing inside a pipe. I'm also interested in planetary problems. So, for example, how some asteroids form, what could be the possible connection with fluid mechanics? Well, some of these asteroids, these are called rubble pile asteroids, they are formed by congregation of very small grains. And how grains behave in a congregation is something called granular flows. And that's also in the broad realm of fluid mechanics, is part of my interest.
To most people living through the pandemic, it seems life will never be the same. But looking at science, like the paper you published in Nature, we're learning life will never be the same for a long time anyway, because we're in the process of destabilizing the climate. Are you concerned about climate change?
I think at this point, not being concerned about climate change is something that I cannot wrap my mind around. know, it's such a pressing problem, and the effects of it are no longer some speculation, but it's manifest in our face. Sea level rise, permafrost opening up, and there are so many possibilities of a positive feedback loop going on that is likely to make the problem even much worse. But let's say it doesn't get much worse and it just follows. We are so lucky that it just follows the same trend. Even with that, it is very clear that the effects of climate change are being faced by people at present, and many of which are faced by people who are living in parts of the world that don't have the economic strength to quite cope with it. So I think at this point, whether you're a meteorologist or you're any thinking person, climate change should be first and foremost in your mind. It's an existential threat.
Do you follow climate science in Japan? Is it your impression this is a growing field of study there?
I am not sure about if it's a growing field or not, but I know that this is something that is studied quite intensively in Japan. I know, for example, the government is also quite committed to becoming carbon neutral as soon as possible. So unlike some other parts of the world, this is not a controversial political topic here. It is quite well understood by scientists as well as politicians. This is a problem that has to be confronted with and has to be confronted with alacrity and with real determination.
Our guest is Professor Pinaki Chakraborty from the Okinawa Institute of Science and Technology in Japan. We just learned big storms are keeping their power longer after they hit land due to climate change. You can find links to the paper, Slower Decay of Landfalling Hurricanes in a Warming World, in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Pinaki, thank you for helping us on Radio EcoShock.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I'm Alex Smith.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.